Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to the D.L. Hughley Show Uncut. Our first guest is a U.S. counterterrorism intelligence officer and MSNBC contributor. Welcome, Malcolm Nance.
I got to tell you, I'm a big fan of yours. And usually like spies at all, but you,
he's a good spy.
any dudes I know named Malcolm weren't spies, they were snitches, and that's a whole different thing.
Come on, man. No black spies matter.
Yeah.
Very good.
I'll do the jokes. You just keep us from being invaded. How about that? You have a way of taking very complicated, nuanced, intelligence and kind of making it bite-sized, digestible pieces. My problem, what I see right now, is a nation full of people who don't care that America becomes a failed state, who don't really believe in it. They couldn't love America, or the America they've always loved or pretended to love, if they're allowing it to become the equivalent of a failed state.
Sure. And, you know, the problem is it's more than the 73 million people that voted for Donald Trump. You have to understand that in the 2016 election, 120 million eligible Americans didn't vote at all.
Sure, sure.
They didn't even bother.
Sure.
And so many of them were led to believe by a lot of propaganda, certainly in our community. My own barber in Philadelphia said, what do we got to lose voting for Donald Trump? But the one thing I found out after the election is they didn't vote at all.
Right.
And so by creating a network or a bubble of apathy around our own community and all other communities, people who really could benefit from good governance won't. And people who, you know, don't participate don't see anything but bad governance, especially when we're dealing with essentially a wannabe dictator like Donald Trump.
No, he does. But wasn't that the game? Wasn't that the game to create so much mistrust and apathy that it was indecipherable? Like, I hear people go, listen, Joe Biden, the crime bill, and Kamala's, and I understand all that. No one's without fault. But they're distinctly different types of human beings. And they're distinctly different types. You have people now who will not accept the results of an election that is slanted in both the Republican favor and the incumbent's favor. Like, you have everything. Like, literally, it's hard to beat an incumbent president because of all the levers of power that he has, even if he used them legally and Trump was willing to use them illegally. But you lost, and you cheated and lost, and you're mad. Like, that's what I don't understand.
You know, this is the ultimate manifestation of the man. I mean, everything that we had is this cartoonish character of people who abuse power, people who could actually come in and use those levers and manipulate hatred against black people and, you know, sideline education and call their stupid people call people stupid and make them feel like being dumb is a virtue.
Right.
Right? This is literally that character, the man, the, you know, the elderly white guy who manipulates the country. Only Trump did it out loud.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Puts off, did it in your face, and then said, look, I'm entertainment. You should be entertained. That's an indictment against ourselves and our own education. But 73 million people voted for all of his abuses.
Yeah.
Because, not because of just racism. And I said this on Bill Maher's show last Friday. It's not just racism, but they have no problem with racism. What they voted for was tribalism. They were promised by Donald Trump they would remain the dominant tribe in America. White, male, doesn't matter whether you're uneducated or educated, you will always be the superior party, numbers be damned. And they said, hey, that's a good idea. Let's go with that.
You know, it really flies in the face of American history. If white people wanted to be dominant, they wouldn't have brought us here. We wouldn't be here in the first place. Like, as a matter of fact, I can't think of anything that's good pure white. Like, potatoes ain't good. Rice ain't good. Like, if you eat anything pure white, you're going to see an endocrinologist pretty soon. Hell, even cocaine got to get cut. I mean, nothing. But this idea of this purity where America never was that and always needed an influx of black and brown people to start to ascend and become the reason that we were something, and I think that that's debatable now. I think the idea of America as a construct is over. If it's not over, it's certainly on life support.
I agree with you on that point. On what, with one condition, because Barack Obama just said this the other day. America is in a period of crisis. We've had a lot of crises in our history. Look, I'm a born and bred Philadelphian. I literally go stand and sit at the places where the American democracy was founded, including the cemetery right behind Independence Mall, which was a historically black cemetery during the Revolution that's filled with thousands of bodies of unknown white soldiers right next to the black servants. The promise of the American experiment is such that we know we're going to go two steps backwards, but we will continue to move forward. And we have actually...
Yeah, but Malcolm, I disagree. I think that's the problem of black Americans and brown. Like, we understand we had to go two steps forward and get one. We understood that. We had to work twice as hard to get half as far. But I think that America becoming resigned to that fact is what we're going through right now. The fact is that we have always... I'm going to say something that I truly believe. Black and brown people love America much more than people who always had a right to her. We love her in spite of what happened.
You're right, because we're conscious
right.
of what it took to create.
Right.
Look, my family, every man's man has served in the armed forces since 1864.
I heard you say that.
And
I heard
right
you say
now,
that several times.
I got
times.
A
yeah.
niece who's fighting, who was in fighting off combat off Yemen last year. I mean, we do it because we love the country. We understand the concept. We know what the American experiment means. But when the American experiment has always been a right, a birthright granted to you by dint of skin color, then you don't care.
And,
you know,
and,
whether you have to re-engineer it and turn it into something that is no longer what it originally was.
I think that America is becoming, I love this country, but I'm flummoxed by the things that I see. This is America fulfilling its promise. This is America saying that we all are created equal. This is America saying that you can come here and become something. This is America saying that we're this great melting pot and this great experiment. Right. This is also, it's particularly interesting that almost every demographic is experiencing an uptick in mortality, except mm-hmm. for older white men. Being white and being married to the idea of what it is killing you. It is literally lessening your life and taking away the prospects you could have for a richer life because you are stuck in some idea of what is a birthright that now is a jumbo. I can win just like you can.
Yeah, you know, you understand that. I understand that. Everyone who watches your show understands that. But the average person on the street, they could be presented with those facts and they would say the exact same thing that I've heard, you know, since my brother was hanging out on 52nd Street in Philadelphia 30, 40 years ago. Well, how does that affect me? Well, it affects you when you go to the hospital.
Right.
It affects
right.
you if you get a virus that can be mortal
right.
to our community. But if you're living day to day, hour to hour, dollar to dollar, it never seems like it gets ahead. And my problem is that the conservatives, the Trump Republicans, have managed to manipulate the belief that African Americans don't get ahead into voting for a guy that would destroy them.
Right.
Yeah.
But you know what's interesting to me? I don't. That doesn't really. I think the story isn't the people that decide. It's that 90% of us didn't. It's the fact that 75% of Latins did. It's the fact that 60% of white people decided they wanted to vote for the pathological lying racist.
Oh my God.
They decided that. So if you saw 10 black people, 9 of them voted for Biden. You saw 10 Latins, 7 of them voted for Biden. But if you saw 10 white people, most of them voted for him. Most of them voted for Trump. But they say that the few that got sheared off, it ain't a problem with Lil Wayne. It's Ma and Pa Kettle that are the problem.
Yeah, well, Ma and Pa Kettle are very good examples. If you recall those movie characters from the 1930s and 40s, right? Well-meaning, good-spirited, running around with a gun. But, you know, I'm certain there was another part of Ma and Pa Kettle that were And, you know, I mean, our version of the American dream, you know, is one filled with our heart where we literally gave our strength, our labor to build the Capitol, the White House. And other people think that because they are, as someone once said to me, born free, white, and young, or young, white, and free, that they're entitled to everything. And that goes down to the individual who doesn't have an high school education, that might be high on crystal meth most of the time, runs around in a beater car. It cuts right back to the old slave era statement that the lowest white man is better than the highest, most educated, wealthy black man. That is an inherent systematic structural flaw in what is keeping people from even allowing that the American dream should be equal.
Yeah. I think that if you use words like equal and fair, but this election was particularly telling to me. And I'll tell you why, because this was a daunting task, to say the least. You had a president who was dictatorial. Who you know didn't mind destroying the post office because he anticipated there would be mail-in ballots, didn't mind putting his citizenry at risk, didn't mind lying, said all these things in power, and it was a daunting task, and they still lost. What's scaring people right now is despite it shows you what people united can do against very powerful odds that you saw what the Latins did in our Latin brothers and sisters did in Arizona and Nevada. It's daunting. Sure. That apparatus, what they did in Georgia, what they did in Wisconsin, what they did, because it was clearly that people who are not what people think. When you think of Americans, you certainly don't think of the people that kind of carried the day. We do, but I think a lot of people don't. And in spite of everything they did, they lost, and that's frightening. That's frightening right now. That means that everything they did failed, and I'd rather tear this country up.
Well, you know, I'm writing a book right now about what I call the coming Trump insurgency. And it's, you know, an insurgency is a political paramilitary movement which is designed to tear down the stability structures of a nation and replace them with a revolutionary substitute. This thing is not over. We are in a pause period where we can right some of the wrongs, we can correct some of the actions of Donald Trump. He's not joking when he says he's going to run for president in 2024, because one, he needs money. Two, he has this base of support, 73 million Americans who would rather destroy the nation if so long as it cannot be forged in their image and so that they don't have to share with Americans, people of color or women or gays or any other person outside of their very narrow tribe. You know, the funny thing about it is that my family served in the military in order to protect the opportunity for everyone to participate within this country. And there was a woman that was interviewed at a Trump rally last year, and she said, you know, I didn't think that America should have a dictator, but if we have to have one, it should be Donald Trump. I see that sentiment all day, every day.
So let me get this straight. You believe that there is going to be the equivalent of what banana republics have, what other countries have, where they're going to be rebels and armed insurgents who attack military installations and soft targets and all the things that you read about going on somewhere else?
Well, you know, in the counterinsurgency world, we call the insurgency has three phases that were developed mainly under Mao Zedong. Phase one insurgency is political. And what you do is you create a counteracting party whose job it is to subvert the legitimacy of the established
calling press the enemy, calling the legitimate press the enemy, and the other side the enemy, and people, right, okay.
That's right. But on the subversive side, you have them create armed militias, armed paramilitary organizations, and they engage in subversive activity like knocking down power grids or doing what I call vanilla ISIS convoys, right? You saw those convoys during the campaign. Imagine those convoys with armed people using that as they do it legally, but they do it in an effort to intimidate entire population. There was a call for white truckers, Trump supporting truckers, to shut down the American highway. At some point, all of these things are going to happen. And these are textbook phase one insurgency that we actually train to defeat in other countries.
If what stops that is this pushback from people who decide that this is not where they want to live. And my concern, to your point, is that there aren't enough of those people. There aren't enough people who decide that, because I think America, to me, for a lot of black and brown people and others, I would call them people who this coalition, their best way forward, their best way up is forward. Their best way they have to move forward. Movement is life. For the other side, going back is the way they want to set. So you have these two like converging forces, one who wants to move forward because that's the only way that we can ever hope that anything happens, and the other one who wants to stay rooted where they were. And this America's in the middle. The idea of her is in the middle, and I think you have these forces, and I don't know that there are going to be enough people opposing the other side.
We actually have more than enough people. This summer, the protests in support of George Floyd, which took place not just in the United States, but all around the world, has actually finally given young Americans, black, white, Latino, of all stripes, the incentive to get outside of their houses. And granted, they were stuck there because of coronavirus.
But
if you can go out on the street every night and protest, those young people finally came to vote on election day. We have to maintain the coalition as it exists right now. Because I'm going to tell you, we have a lot of people who are all thinking, yay, we won. We're going to offer some kumbaya to the Republicans, and they're going to come along, and we're going to do great over the next 4 years. No, this is Barack Obama 2.0. They have already openly and publicly committed to ensuring this government fails, but we have the added attraction of Donald Trump on Twitter, out of office of president, essentially acting like Saddam Hussein from a bunker with his Houdain and Hussein sons and daughters out there declaring this government is not legitimate and that it must be torn down for the next 4 years. So nothing's going to change unless we make a change.
Now, what does that look like? Because that's very
scary,
interesting.
Scary, I know that.
I'm a scary guy.
Yeah, you
yes,
are.
Indeed.
Well, you're literally a spook. Like, I don't mean that. I'm not even trying to be offensive.
Spooky spook is yes. What we call it.
Okay. So, I mean, not the way they're saying it in a bar right now. I mean, like not at a Trump rally. I mean, so you have given us the diagnosis. We understand. What is the prescription?
Well, the prescription is the one thing that actually happened several times this year. Vladimir Putin gave a speech about 3 years ago where he warned Donald Trump about populist action, about people power. The one thing that the Russians hated was when Ukraine had these, you know, these former Soviet states were having these color revolutions, the Orange Revolution in the Ukraine, the Estonians rising up. People power terrifies dictators. The election of 2020 was a people power action. But I don't think we would have had the level of participation that we would have had we not had these protests during the summer, had we not had coronavirus, had we not suddenly seen the American experiment was about to utterly fail after 245 years. People are now motivated, and we can't do like we did with the Women's March, right, in 2017. We can't just have one march and say, well, we're good. We're just going to let this guy do his thing. No, we have to stay focused. We now have to win Georgia, both Senate seats, and we have to constantly mobilize to defend what we have.
I gotta ask you. I know you gotta go, and I really am the biggest fan of yours because I can actually understand what you're talking about. So it must be digestible. You sound hopeful, and that's in contrast to the backdrop of this dystopian view idea of what we could become. Why do you sound hopeful?
Oh, let me tell you something. I've defended this country in operations and activities and places in this world which would terrify you. I'm not joking. I mean,
I've read your books. You scare me now, and I'm, you know.
Problem is, and I've said this many times, is that, you know, I don't mind dealing with third world potentates, but I now, 2016, I had to start looking behind my back and realize that my government was the equivalent to a Russian autocrat or a Turkish dictator and was in love with a North Korean communist tyrant who mass murders his own people. So now it was very easy to do assessments of just how much danger we were in. But you know what? We have always come together. The nation is made up of true patriots. The problem is we have 73 million Americans who have been blinded by sheer propaganda, by foreign activities, which have led them to believe that our worst enemies are our bestest buddy, and a president who is obviously in debt to a foreign power and decided that autocracy was far better than democracy. Well, you know what? We have proven him wrong. The guardrails have held, and now we need to strengthen them and go out and break this coalition that they have. But I have some bad news for you.
Did you have good news? Where was the good news? Where was the wait? I missed
the good news too. I was like, I thought that was the bad news.
Good
damn!
He's like the Sharday of the Sharday of the intelligence world. Jesus Christ! Give me the good news.
The good news is that we're focused. The bad news is they're focused. I mean, I monitor right-wing extremist traffic all day. I watch what people are saying in the right-wing media. These people are using, on the far end, eliminationist rhetoric. I mean, I saw a meme the other day that was calling for the democratic extinction.
I saw it.
The QAnon cult conspiracy theory is burning through the Republican Party. I suspect that within a year, it will be the dominant platform of the Republicans.
The only
thing we can do, the best thing we could do, is break up Facebook.
But you know, I don't disagree. I think it's become something it wasn't intended. But what gives me hope, even though I'm a pretty cynical guy, is that if you look all over the world, and particularly even in this country, we have always had to face men like this. We have always had to face odds like this. Every advancement we've ever had has been over the protests of men like this. In South Africa, it was over the protests of men like this. They are not, you know, bullets kill men, not ideas. And the bottom line to us is they are much weaker than us because we know all we have is forward. All we have is that.
Yeah.
You know, I was asked today, how would I attack this if I was in the Biden administration? Do you remember the public service announcement on television, the old PSAs where the government would say, put on your seatbelt or something
right.
Well, Trump has set the pace for using the government to share information. We need to now re-harness and take back patriotism in the first phase by saying that looking out for the health of the nation is patriotic. Why would you want to work with a foreign ally to weaken this nation? Because you don't want to wear a mask. You wear your seatbelt, right? You wear all other things that the government
helmet. Don't smoke and
pasteurized milk.
Right.
So we have to take the reins of government. And I'm sorry, this administration is going to have to govern over that 40%, whether they like it or not.
Absolutely.
They all benefit that 40%.
Yeah.
But they don't know that. They're out calling us literally communists. That's what I see every day, that we're communists. This is a, and they support a president that literally kisses a communist in Helsinki and shares love letters with a communist in North Korea.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Mm-mm. I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to listen to the spook.
I'm going to listen to him too.
This is the friendly.
Bad news and all.
This is the friendly ghost for real. Hey, thank you, Malcolm. Thank you, man.
So much.
Thank you for sharing all that with us. We appreciate it, man.
And
you
be careful. Always my pleasure. Anytime.
Thank you, man. Take care. All right.
You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Our next guest is an author and a political commentator. His book, My Vanishing Country, a memoir, is available wherever books are sold. It's Bakari Sellers.
Hey, my dude, you all right?
Man, I'm good. I was bumping to the music.
Well, you can when you're a New York Times bestseller.
Exactly.
She forgot to say that, New York Times bestseller.
I didn't want to show you up, you know.
No, that feels good to say. Please say it.
Yeah.
New York Times bestseller.
I've done it a few times myself. Let me tell you, it's a wonderful
feeling. I
knew you were
going to say that.
You know what's interesting? Even that speaks to what we want to talk about, because you're a political activist and a commentator, which is very hard for a particular. It's not a genre that tends to sell a lot of books, but you did it anyway. Like that's not what people buy. Like, it has to be funny or how to, or but you managed to sell a book, a lot of books that were about a thing that people kind of have an abstract concept of. That was interesting.
During a pandemic.
Right.
I did a whole book tour with no pants on. Just sitting in front of my computer.
With no pants on. That's interesting.
You could go work at Fox News now. It's crazy. So.
No, but you know, I think that right now, and I oftentimes say that this is kind of one of the weird, tangible benefits of the election of Donald Trump, that people just want your unabashed truth right now.
Right.
In my book, I was able to speak, I was authentic, and I was able to speak my truth of power. You know, I'm a country boy, 3 stoplights and a blinking light, Denmark, South Carolina. And for far too long, when people said rural or when people said working class, they meant white. And I'm like, no, I grew up with a bunch of rural working class black folks, and I wanted to tell their story.
You know, when you talk about your country vanishing, for a lot of black people, the idea of America is just really appearing. The potential of it is really appearing. Like, and I think that there are some people who believe it's vanishing. But for us, the smoke and fear is really hope, like that it could actually change, as evidenced by the last election cycle. Do you think there can be, because in order for there to be a reconciliation, there had to be a conciliation. We've never reconciled ourselves with what's going on here. But do you think that there can be a kind of forging a way forward in this country?
So there are two things. One is, and I think you'll appreciate this, my grandma, you know how old folk got saying
right.
that don't make sense.
Right.
Right. My grandma would always say, you can't fall off the floor. And there's so many of us. There's so many people in this country, particularly black folk, who feel like we are on the floor. And that is the difficult part, having to realize that we have to reach an extended hand over to help us get up. Many times we have to get up on our own. So that's first. When you talk about reconciliation, you know, one thing that I'm tired of is people are oftentimes saying, well, when are black folks going to forgive? And we are always in this position where we have to forgive first when nobody's apologized.
Right. No one said, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no one said, I'm sorry, but yet and still black folk are still supposed to forgive. Look, 401 years ago, we came into this country. They took absolutely everything from us, but our hopefulness and our faithfulness. And although, as my grandma would always say, we're still on the floor together, black folk always will maintain that hope, and we always will maintain that faithfulness.
I believe that black people love America more than anybody. Black and brown people love America more than anybody. I think that we have seen the worst of her and still hold out hope for her. And I think conversely, people have seen what they feel is the best. I think what's going on with a lot of people now is they're seeing the America that doesn't just bend their way and do it their way. Like, case in point, you know that by any standard, whether you agree with the Electoral College or not, which I do not, you still lost by Alabama. I'm talking about the population of Alabama and a couple of the Dakotas and Vermont. You lost by that many people. But the notion that you believe you won and that there are people who believe it, it says to me that I'm really American. They shouldn't be voting anyway. And I should count more.
You know, the funny thing about what you're saying is that there are a large swath of white folks, particularly white college educated folks, who will look at you and be like, I can't believe it got this bad. Oh my God. And black folks are like, nah, we
didn't know. Right.
Like, we shall overcome. Like, right. We know what this is.
Right.
Like, Donald Trump didn't start racism.
No.
Like, it's been here before him. It's going to be here after him. And now he was an arsonist who we elected to put out a fire, but that's a whole different story. And 55% of white women own that one. But what we have to begin to do is try to figure out how we get finally to what I want for black folks, DL, is I want black folks to finally be able to get to that point where we can scream and actualize black power. And when I say that, I mean black economic power and I mean black wealth. Those are two things, and black political power, excuse me. Those are two things which we don't have, which we need to attain.
I think that we haven't harnessed it, but I will say this. I think now it's very hard to beat an incumbent president just because of the levers of power that he can legally use, but particularly an amoral man like this, a demagogue, who would do whatever. Like, when you're telling me the post office is rigged, the election was rigged, but you didn't say shit about the post office or trying to burn it down. It's tough to beat them, and I think what's very frightening, it's tough to beat an incumbent president anyway. It's tough to beat one using legal measures, but it's much tougher to use somebody who has no governors. And he cheated and lost. And he lost because black, brown, black and brown people and young white educated people formed a coalition that was not like what we'd seen before and beat him.
Correct.
And beat him sizably.
But not only that, I mean, you know, what I look at, the stat I look at, not only did black folks turn out in Milwaukee, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, and you look in Detroit, black folks just, and Atlanta and Las Vegas. But look at Navajo Indians
in
Arizona. Donald Trump got beat 97-3. You know how hard it is? story by a group of people in an entire state. They literally hate you.
Right. You knew it was bad when the casinos were closed that day on the 3rd. Ain't nobody playing blackjack.
Listen, I will just tell you that the coalition that Joe Biden built is not the Obama coalition by any stretch.
No.
He ain't beat Joe Biden. And this is the funny part about politics. Politics is like golf, man. You hit one good shot and it brings you back. The unique fact about Joe Biden, who would have ever guessed that Joe Biden would have this transcendent role in the Democratic Party? He was the vice president to the first black president,
right,
and ushered in the first black president. I don't think anybody would have ever guessed that would have happened.
But I think that he also is something we embody. Like, Joe Biden struggled and Biden's a lot of R's. He lost the family earlier. Then he kept going. Then he got sick and he kept going. And then he lost a son again and kept going. I think his struggle in a lot of ways mirrors ours. I think that, to me, this situation called for something we would have never done before. Like, Joe Biden, I think if we don't have this, we don't have Trump and we don't have Corona, we don't have Joe Biden's not president. I don't think that that happens.
Let me throw one more at you. I think if Donald Trump would have just worn a mask.
Yeah. And pretended still, like he cared. Yeah.
He would have still been president. Yeah. You're talking about Joe Biden. Joe Biden is probably the only person who was running for president who could beat Donald Trump.
That's what
and
I said.
And I take anybody who supported Kamala Harris. But Joe Biden also is 180 degrees different from Donald Trump. Like, Donald Trump is a narcissistic sociopath, right? And I think we all know that. But Joe Biden, here you have a man who represents so much empathy, so much care, so much compassion. Is he going to be this radical revolutionary?
No.
But he's the healing salve that we needed at this particular moment.
I think this. I think that it says a lot. I think you're right. I think that if Trump, all he'd do was feign empathy, he wins. But I think it says a lot that God sent the same kind of, he had to send the same plague he sent at the Pharaoh to get that motherfucker out there. We ran out of frogs. Send them niggas Corona. One thing, does America have a path forward? Because I think one of the ways that we move forward is we stop asking people to be with us who never will. I think that it's not enough to gain power, so you have to use it. And I think to use it to the people who service you is the way forward.
So look, I got 2 points on that. The first is it's frustrating me that a lot of good white folk, that's what I'm calling them, a lot of good white folk now want me to extend a hand over to those Trump supporters who didn't believe in the very essence of my existence.
Right.
Okay, well, one, you should extend a hand. I'm not sure that's the way it works, first. And, you know, the second thing about where we are is, and this is when you drill down into demographics, nothing in this country will change until white male evangelicals who actually ran this last administration actually grow some testicular fortitude and ascribe to the same Bible that the rest of us do to actually know Christianity and compassion looks like.
One quote. Let me one quote.
I use that on CNN.
I
use that
on CNN. I like it.
You could say ball. You could say balls here. I'm married. I don't have any. Listen. One quote from the book that shocked you that you read it, wrote it, and shocked you that it stayed in. A quote from the book. Something you wrote. A passage from the book.
Oh man, I you know that's actually good because I go through and tell people. For the purposes of what we do on a daily basis, my father would always tell me, never argue with a fool because the people watching can't tell the difference. And so I utilize that in my daily work. I utilize that in my life, and it helps conserve some energy, some patience, and some and a little bit of my sanity.
So your book, My Vanishing Country, a memoir, it is a New York Times bestseller. And it takes a lot to get that done. And you ain't told one joke in the book. See, that's what's horrible to me. You still got a New York Times bestseller. Bakari Sellers.
Thanks, Bakari.
Thank you, man. Take care.
Congrats.
It's an honor, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.